We are going to set up here to talk to our senator from the 14th Legislative District, Curtis King. Curtis, nice to have you with us today. Do I have Curtis King? Let me see here. And I'm talking with Curtis King, our 14th District Senator. And how you doing today?
We're doing very well, sir. How about yourself?
Good. Just connecting up and nice to have you. And we haven't talked in a long time, but I really enjoyed your town hall that you had the other day. That was really well done.
Oh, I appreciate the comment. Those things are always fun. They're interesting. We like the ability to be able to answer people's questions. And unfortunately, there's never enough time to get to all of them. But yeah. We will have more of those and try to listen to what the people have to say, because that's what we're there for. So
when I was talking with Gina on Thursday night, you guys had a really late session, didn't you, to close things out?
Yeah, it was an interesting evening. We had to be done by midnight. What we call signy died
exactly.
About 10 minutes to 12,
mm-hmm.
You know. It didn't need to go that long, but, we don't have control, so we just got to do what we got to do. So
let's talk about something that's near and dear to you, because you have been working on transportation issues for a long time. Talk about some of the bills maybe you were involved in this legislative session.
Well, we have been, as you say, I've been on transportation since I got elected 15 years ago, and... I've been in the ranking. I've just been a member of the committee. I've been ranking. I've been the chair for 4 or 5 years. So we've covered all those waterfronts. But it was an interesting session in transportation. Obviously, we did the supplemental transportation budget, and we did that. The Democrats and Republicans, the rankings and the chairs all got together, and we worked on a budget, and we did it together. And
great.
I believe we came out with a relatively reasonable supplemental budget to get it through the rest of this biennium.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, the Democrats put forth a new transportation package. It was 16 years, $16 billion, and it included a variety of things. It included all of the money from a bill we passed last year, which was called Cap and Trade. I think it raised $5.4 billion over those 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
There was a $2 billion allotment out of the operating budget that went to transportation in one fell swoop. And then the interesting part to me was they then decided that they needed to raise more money. They used the money from the infrastructure that came out of the infrastructure grants that came out of D.C. But then they added things like stolen vehicle check fees. They added things like dealer temporary permits. They increased all of these fees. Enhanced driver's license fees went up $24. The stolen vehicle fee went up from $15 to $40.
Okay.
I mean, it some of these increases were 400% increases. It raised the interesting part is those are all on people that own cars, and it's not just gas-powered cars, it's electric cars. Everybody that owns a car, because there's this attack on people that own cars because they're not supposed to be, they don't like cars. So they keep taxing the people that own cars, and it shows right here, $2.7 billion over the next 16 years. Because what they want is they want everybody out of the car, and I can tell you that now that they think they have the electric car thing sold, now they're working on getting people out of their electric cars even.
Oh, my, yeah, crazy.
They want people to ride a bus or walk or ride a bike. That's their goal. And that may work in downtown Seattle or the outskirts of downtown Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
but it doesn't work real well in rural Washington.
Even not even Yakima, right?
Not even Yakima.
Okay.
It's amazing to me, but they needed these fees, and there was absolutely no input from the Republicans in this package.
Okay.
The Democrats worked on it for several months, and they came to the agreement that they got to, but there was no input from us. And so the initial package, and then I'll get off of this, but the initial package had a 6 cent gas tax increase for the gas that we export from the state.
Mm-hmm.
So that impacted Oregon, Idaho, and Alaska for the most part. That's where most of the gas that we export goes.
Okay.
And they what they were saying is, well, we're going to charge you 6 cents more to these three states for the gas that you buy from us.
Mm-hmm.
And the three states went ballistic. The governors and everybody else said, well, one, it's against the law. We have federal laws that said it's a restraint of trade. You can't do it. Mm-hmm. But they tried to do it anyway. They got all of the governors and the states all worked up. And then at the last minute, they realized it wasn't going anywhere, and they backed off and came up with some other sources. They took money from the Public Works Trust Fund, and then the operating budget said, well, we'll give you another $57 million a year for the next 16 years to help make up for all of that. Yeah, the part that was the most bothersome, I guess, is the fact that they did all this without even giving us any the ability to have any input whatsoever. There's some good things in it. We can't deny that, but it's the idea that transportation used to be totally bipartisan. We all worked together. We didn't always agree, but we got to an agreement. Representative Cliburn and I did that in 2015 with the Connecting Washington package that we passed.
Okay.
We worked together. There wasn't any of that this year.
Yeah, and you get that even from the House side. I mean, the majority really doesn't let the Republicans really have much say or input.
They run a very tight ship in regards to that.
Mm-hmm.
The operating budget, which is now $64 billion. When I got there 15 years ago, it was like 27.
Really?
I mean, this supplemental budget is up over $5 billion from where we were last year.
Mm-hmm.
$5 billion. That's almost 10%. It's amazing. And so last session, so in 2021, we had a rainy day fund.
Oh, yeah.
And they drained that. They drained that fund in 2021. So they come back this year, because they had more money than they actually knew what to do with. The projections, they were up somewhere, I mean, I've heard as high as $15 billion. Well, they spent 6 or 7 of it. They put another 5 or 6 into what they call their reserves. Now,
mm-hmm.
you need to understand the nuance of that, is
mm-hmm.
that it's not the rainy day fund, because that has parameters around it and how you can use it and when you can use it. They put it in another bucket over somewhere else because they want to be able to access it when and wherever they want to without any of the limitations that come with the rainy day fund.
Okay.
That's the part that's troubling.
All right. And I just wanted to ask you a couple more questions. Before I want to ask you a couple more transportation questions, but I want to talk more about the
sure.
budget. Was there any money set aside for road repair? Because our roads are in desperate shape.
They put $3 billion in this new package for maintenance and preservation.
Okay.
As an example, I came out with a proposal that put $6 billion into it.
Okay.
I came out with a proposal that was $22 billion budget that gave them everything they wanted. But where the money came from was the sales tax on cars and trucks. That
right.
all goes to the operating budget. We said, give us half of it. And we can show how we can use that money in transportation that'll return to the state, you know,
mm-hmm.
at least what you've given up, if not 2 or 3 times. But they didn't want to hear that. They didn't even talk to me about it. They wouldn't even, you know, acknowledge that it was there. But we do put $3 billion into maintenance and preservation, and we all know that's probably half of what we need, if not a little less than half. Because our roads and our bridges are in great need of repair, and, yeah. and we have to face that fact. So in regards to bridges, while I'm talking about bridges, we were able to get a bill passed that allowed change our statutes in Washington to line up with a bill that was passed in Oregon so that we could form a bi-state bridge authority for the Hood River Bridge.
Yeah.
So that we can put that group together now as soon as the governor signs the bill, which I hope he will, and we can form this bi-state bridge authority and start to really get into building a new bridge at Hood River, because we all know how badly that is needed.
Yeah.
We were also able to get $75 million put into this new package for the Hood River Bridge.
Okay.
It's not all what we need, but it's a good start. So.
What about some of our state roads, though? I mean, you know, they're pretty bad, too.
Well, unfortunately, I'm assuming you're talking maybe county roads
or
city roads.
Yeah, county roads. Yeah, they would be county roads. They would be. Sorry about that. Yeah.
No, that's fine. Unfortunately, the package did little to nothing to help them. The comment we get when we talk about this is, well, next year, when we come back next year, you got to look at a gas tax increase, and then you can fund all those things.
Yeah, with gas prices
close to... We've all seen what the price... Yeah.
Yeah, with the gas prices, they're so high, it's pretty crazy. Yeah, definitely.
Well, and the bad news there is, as I referenced, we passed cap and trade, which also then allowed the governor to implement a low carbon fuel standards. Well, those two items, which will kick in 2023... are going to raise the price of gas probably somewhere between 75 cents and a dollar.
Whoa.
Just those two items.
Just those two items.
On top of what's already there now.
Okay.
I mean, it's like, because again, the whole idea presented, at least in Olympia and mainly from downtown Seattle, is, we want people out of their cars. So if we make the price of gas so high that nobody can afford to drive their cars, then we've taken away that element and everybody's got to go buy an electric car.
Yeah.
And I would say to you this, that right now there's probably 107,000 electric cars in the state of Washington out of 8 million vehicles.
Yeah.
So that's not even 2%.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, and we have been subsidizing electric vehicles since 2009, as have the Fed. And still, we're only at 107,000. Now, in this package that was passed, they say by 2030, the goal is to have everybody in an electric car. And that at 2030, we will no longer register, again, it's a goal, supposedly, we will no longer register new gas-powered cars in the state of Washington. Now, that's again, this is government heavy-handed telling us what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. It goes way beyond what I think government should be.
Sounds like a controlling thing.
Well, I mean, it is. Now, we haven't even talked about housing, because I would tell you the same thing is occurring in housing. So there was a bill that said, you know, you have to have, if you build a new home, you have to put in a charging, you have to set up so that you can put in a charging system for your electric car in your home, mandatory. There was also another one that said you have to wire the house so that at some point you can put solar on your roof or wherever you want to put it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they just keep coming with these regulations, and all it does is drive the cost of housing up, up, and up. And then you wonder why nobody can afford a single-family home. And it goes back to, it's the same principle with housing as it is in cars now. I mean, this year was the first year I have heard people say, we got to get rid of single-family homes because single-family homes are not good for the environment.
Oh, okay.
You believe that?
I mean, this
used to be what all of us worked for, was to own our own home, have our own little piece of property and our home that we could take care of it and live in and enjoy. But now, again, government at its finest is saying, you know, no, we don't think single-family homes are the way to go. There was a bill that said you could go into a single-family home development, you know, and you could require that they start to allow duplexes and multifamily homes, low-income housing. Mm-hmm. You could put those in there. You could government could mandate that they could do that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's getting to the point where everything is about the environment. It doesn't matter what it is, what the outcomes are. You know, we all want to take care of our environment.
Mm-hmm.
But I would point out to you that the environment, the emissions that we have in the state of Washington on a worldwide level are less than 0.3% of the emissions.
Really? Of the whole world? That's impressive.
The whole world. 0.3%. Yet, here we are.
Okay.
Driving the price of gas up.
Right.
Driving the price of housing up.
Mm-hmm.
All because we want to be the greenest state. We want to have the greenest governor. We, you know, that's what this is all about. And it's all done at the expense of the citizens of the state of Washington, in my opinion.
Now, I got to tell you, solar is a bone of contention in our county because...
I know that.
You know about that because solar developments are coming up. The county commissioners are approving it. And a lot of citizens, the majority that we've polled, are against solar projects, going to ruin our valuable farmland.
Yeah, no, I understand. We'll see how that plays out. I know that when I drive back to Olympia from Yakima, I usually it's on a Sunday afternoon and I take Snoqualmie Pass.
Oh man!
But right where you turn off of I-82 to get on I-90, there was an alfalfa field there that is now a solar farm.
Oh my!
And the part that I find interesting is they talk about all the green jobs we're going to have.
Mm-hmm.
So that solar farm, I doubt that there's one individual that is going to work on that on a daily basis.
Right.
Once it's put in and installed, it's just all operated, you know, by computers and everything else. And unless there need, you know, you need to go in and clean them or whatever you do to solar farms, I don't know. You're not creating jobs.
No.
At most, there may be one person there. So.
And that was the same with wind turbines. We learned that here.
That's exactly right.
Exactly.
You know, they talk about all these green jobs we're going to create.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're not there. Let me tell you, they're just not there. But they just keep promoting it, and everybody, you know, they figure as long as they keep talking about it, the more people will believe them. So.
Yeah. Now, I want to ask you one more question. This really is outside your jurisdiction, and I want to talk more about the budget. I know this is outside your area of consideration, but we lost our Goldendale licensing for people to license their cars here in Goldendale. The name of the program I've forgotten exactly, but we have no way. We have no driver's licensing agency in Goldendale now. The closest we have is Yakima and White Salmon.
Yep.
So, is there any way of restoring that? Because for years we've been missing it.
In all honesty, I don't know that,
okay.
But I'll be glad to look into it. I know that. A lot of things were done, mainly because people were driving less. There was less demand, you know, and right now they can't find enough people, which is true of most businesses, can't find enough employees
exactly
to run these offices. So, but there, I think there are ways that we can look at that and get it back to some semblance of our normality. I know the same came a couple of years ago. I had a gentleman from Goldendale that called me because he needed to have his car inspected, and he found out the only way he could do that was to go to Yakima and have it inspected, which is kind of ridiculous, but because I think there are ways we could have handled that, but at the time, That was his only choice. So we've been working on that as well.
So what are your thoughts on the capital budget that was passed? What are your direct thoughts on that?
Well, I would tell you the capital budget was probably a pretty decent budget. And Representative Mossbrooker and Representative Corey and I try to meet at the beginning of session. And we have a list of requests from, you know, everybody and every group and agency. And so we sit down and we look at, well, here's who's asked me for this project. And we go through all of those together. And then we try to determine how much money we're going to have available to us. And then we divide it up so that Representative Corey isn't asking for the same project that Representative Mossbrooker is asking for. And the same as with me.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that purposely because, particularly in the House, if Representative Corey asks for, let me just pick something here. So the Klickitat County Animal Shelter in Goldendale,
right,
that received $670,000. So if he asked for that and Representative Mossbrooker asked for that, and they both got it, they count that against both of their so-called allotments.
Oh. Now,
those allotments are not written in stone by any stretch of the imagination. But again, so we try to make sure that we're not duplicating the requests. And I think it has worked really well for us. I know that in this operating budget, or excuse me, capital budget, there was a little over $1 million for the comprehensive health care.
Mm-hmm.
For a Goldendale facility.
Okay.
I've referenced the Klickitat County Animal Shelter. Those seem to be the two things that came to the forefront as far as Goldendale was concerned. We got $3.2 million for the food bank that's being built in Yakima.
Okay.
Which I think will help because it's a regional food bank where they're going to distribute, particularly on the central part of the state from border to border. So we've done a variety of things. I mean, it goes so far as wildlife fencing in around the Simcoe area and things. It covers the Rock Creek Bridge. We're replacing that under the Department of Natural Resources. So there's a variety of things that can be included in these capital budgets that are beneficial to our district and to our areas like Goldendale. So felt like that was
That's good. Yeah, that's very good. Any of your own personal pieces of legislation that you're proud of that passed this year?
Well, there's two. I've mentioned the Bridge Authority piece of legislation. That was vital because Oregon passed it this year as well. The governor, their governor's already signed it.
Mm-hmm.
This is one big step to move us forward to get that bridge replaced. I also, the other piece of legislation that passed had to do with allowing wineries and distillers and brewers that had excess capacity in their bottling or canning to sign agreements with others to can and bottle for them.
Oh, okay.
So you know when you're a new winery, as an example, sometimes it's expensive to get all of the equipment so that you can bottle your own wines.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of cases, it's true of distillers. It's true of our craft beers. It takes a lot of money to set up a business of that nature, and so this would allow them to hire a company, another brewery or another winery, to bottle their product. Now they have to create the product and ship it. But we were sending stuff out of state, particularly with distillers, to have it bottled or canned or whatever, even mixed. So anyway, we had a little bill that said, you know, if a winery or a brewer has capacity, they're able to sign an agreement and there's a term for it, and it's not coming to me, but rather than having to get a license, they can get this acknowledgement, and they would be able to bottle or can for these other wineries. It keeps the money in the state. It helps our small wineries, our small distillers, mm-hmm. our small craft brewers. I think it was a good bill passed. It passed through the Senate and the House. The governor signed it last week.
Excellent.
And it was unanimous all the way through. So
great.
That was kind of a fun thing to watch. So
before we go, what are you hearing from your constituents? What is the number one or maybe a couple things that they're concerned about?
Well, I think they're concerned about their safety. The police reforms that were passed last year, they softened a couple of them.
They did.
But they're concerned about their safety, and I don't blame them a bit. I mean, mm-hmm. I want to give you an example if we have time.
Okay.
We had a bill. Now, fortunately, it didn't go anywhere. But this is the way people on the west side, particularly around King County and Seattle and mm-hmm. the bigger cities,
even Vancouver.
Even Vancouver.
Right.
I mean, they look at if people are being arrested, and what they want to tell you is under the war on drugs, that African Americans were arrested four times more than whites. Now, that may or may not be true. It probably is true if we keep hearing it. But the point is, if that was discrimination, then let's work on the discrimination.
There you go.
But their answer is, well, if they're being arrested for violating this law, then let's get rid of the law. And then they won't be arrested. But it impacts the safety of the citizens. So here's an example. The bill said you could not pull a car over for failure to keep to the right, for improper turns, failure to stop. So you could run a red light, you could run a stop sign, mm-hmm. you couldn't stop them. Failure to dim your lights or other equipment violations. So if you had a broken taillight or something of that nature, you can't stop them for parking violations or driving without a license or vehicle registration violations or proof of insurance, driving while your license is suspended, safety belt violations, of course, not including children.
Right.
But this is the attitude of what is going on here. And it isn't that we're going to change the law so we don't have to enforce them because we think they're using it to target certain groups. Now, if that's the case, then let's work on that. Let's not change our laws and put everybody in their safety in doubt.
Yeah.
It is amazing what we've done in the last two sessions about not being able to be arrested because you had fentanyl in your pocket.
Oh, I know.
All you can say to them is, hey, we have a program that can help you get off of that. Do you want to go? Well, you know the answer you're going to get.
Yeah.
But I would tell you, by being arrested, it's the best chance that those people have to get off of a drug and get off of it permanently because there are treatment that can be faced. I went to a drug court here in Yakima. I listened to 20 or so people talk about why they were in this program. And it all had to do with the fact that they got arrested because they had drugs. And it realized that how low they had gone, and they wanted to turn their lives around. And so they were in this drug court, and they were making that effort. And every one of them knew to the day how many days they'd been off of drugs. It was amazing.
Wow.
But if you don't arrest them, you can't get them off of drugs.
All you're doing is you're just enabling them to continue on.
It's exactly right.
Right.
My wife and I went down to buy some flowers yesterday,
mm-hmm.
Saturday. And I look over and in the alley a block away is a gentleman standing there waving his arms and talking to himself.
Right.
His pants are just about ready to fall down to his knees. He can't hardly walk.
Mm.
He obviously is on something. But you could not arrest that person to help them, give them help that they need.
Right.
We're just going to let them go.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll close with, and this is why you see the drug deaths from overdosing on drugs, why you're seeing such a high number, and it's increasing every day. It's because we don't do them a bit of good when we let them, when we can't arrest them for having drugs in their possession. Not one good thing can come from that.
I want to thank you for spending time with me. Maybe we can talk later in the summer if that's okay with you.
I would look forward to that opportunity, Kevin. I really would.
Okay. So we'll talk.
And so great to talk to you, and we just need to do it more often.
All right. We will definitely do that very, very soon. Well, thanks again for being with us this morning on this special program.
Pleasure is mine. You have a great day, sir.
You too. All right. Senator Curtis King from the 14th District here on KLCK with us this morning. We appreciate being able to talk to him.